City Council will come to order. We have gotten through that and all that. So, Carla, can you please read the title for a quick report, but an important report? Item number 1442.
Accept the 2012 Human Trafficking Report from the Portland Police Bureau and Mayor's Office.
Folks that are going to be presenting, could you please come up? This is some of the most important work that this City Council has done. This City Council, I believe, will go down in history as one of the most productive 4 years of any Portland City Council by taking on some tough issues, some long-standing problems, but also being willing to seize on potential opportunities and to realize them. A long-standing problem in the city of Portland has been the awful sex trafficking problem that has plagued us, and awful all around, but especially as it relates to the trafficking of minors for sexual exploitation. Victims of these crimes are often afraid to come forward. Victims come from all walks of life, and often vulnerable youth that are runaways and homeless youth. According to the U.S. Department of Justice, 450,000 youth run away from home each year. And the National Runaway Hotline states that 1 in 3 teens who do run away are likely to be lured into sexual exploitation within 24 hours of being on the street. This is a very serious issue, and we have put together what I think this City Council has supported, funded, putting together a partnership that has realized an amazing, positive, holistic approach to this problem. Between 2011 and 2012, there has been a 250% increases in cases involving federal charges related to sex trafficking. And I want to commend the U.S. Attorney's Office, who has partnered with Portland Police, to take a very aggressive approach to combating this crime. When making comparison between total statistics from 2005 to 2008, compared to 2009 and 2012, human trafficking cases that have been referred locally to the District Attorney's Office by law enforcement have increased 174%. My thanks to the great departing Mike Schrunk and his team in the District Attorney's Office. Human trafficking cases issued by the DA's office increased 221%, and the total amount of prison sentences handed down for human trafficking cases. Prison sentences, the total amount is up by 349%. The reason I'm going through the statistics is that part of the battle that we have waged in confronting and providing options for folks to leave conditions they find themselves in for sexual exploitation is we have battled denial. Denial that has shown up on the front pages of the local daily newspaper, denial amongst other folks in the community that this is a real problem, that as wonderful a city as we are, this is also taking place in our neighborhoods with our kids. So with that, I'm very pleased to turn over to an individual that I've been very impressed with for his tenacity, his smarts, and his absolute passion for helping victims of human trafficking, Sergeant of the Portland Police Bureau Human Trafficking Unit, Mike Geiger.
Thank you, Mayor, City Council, and for those kind words. And I appreciate you bringing up these statistics. I was going to point to them just briefly. When I first saw them, I had had a sense for some time that the work that was being conducted by all of our partners was nothing short of remarkable. But even this caught me a little bit off guard. I didn't realize how dramatic some of the positive things that had been taking place. And I began thinking about this, and I thought, you know, while these numbers are incredible to think about, What occurred to me is there's something much deeper going on. And what I mean by that is we see the percentages, but what exactly do they mean? How did we end up with a 349% increase in prison sentences over just this last couple of years, particularly when children don't self-report or even in most cases self-identify as victims of sex trafficking? If we don't know who they are, then how can we help them? And so what I wanted to focus on was the partnerships that have been developed through the support of the mayor and city council, the city of Portland, the Portland Police Bureau, our chief's office, and the list goes on and on, but I'd like to highlight just a few. The Sexual Assault Resource Center provides direct advocacy, very specialized advocacy for these kids. I see Erin is here, and Erin will be able to talk more about her office, but I just can't tell you how much we've come to rely on them for their expertise, their compassion, and thoughtful way of dealing with these young people. Another organization is LifeWorks Northwest. They provide mental health counseling to these kids and are incredibly dedicated to helping these children. And a number of other social services from Janet's Youth, and the list goes on and on and on, from caring people within this community who are dedicated to helping these children. Others that I want to talk about a little bit is the Multnomah County District Attorney's Office. J.R. Ujafusa is not here today. He wanted to be here, so I extend his greetings and apologies that he couldn't be here. However, he is currently in trial today, and he is prosecuting yet another one of our cases. So, and we expect to see great results from that as well. I also wanted to publicly acknowledge and thank Amanda Marshall, United States Attorney for the District of Oregon, and Scott Caron, who's here. They will talk a little bit more about their involvement, but we could not have seen this kind of success without these partners. Now, what it means to me is if we cannot, or if we have trouble identifying who these kids are, how do we get to where we are today? What I would submit to you is that it is the collaborative approach, it's the relational way in which we view working together that has brought about this success. What we've been able to do is reduce the amount of time between identification and disclosure. And what I mean by that is identifying who the child victim is and receiving relevant and detailed disclosures from that child that have allowed us to compile the kind of case necessary to bring about these astonishing prison sentences. We wouldn't have been able to do that if we didn't have a coherent, combined, unified message being relayed to these children. So the way that I would describe our partnerships is simply this. It is a working partnership that is mutually supportive, interconnected, and focused on the ultimate welfare and restoration of the child. It is a consistent message that the child hears and is showing success in building trust between the child and the organizations dedicated to helping them. It is because of the partnerships that we're seeing success. None of us on our own could have done this by ourselves. It has to be us working together as a team with the objective being the child. And as long as we never lose sight of that, then I believe we will see more and more success and ultimately the restoration of more children. Thank you.
Thank you. And now I'd like to introduce, as mentioned, Scott Caron, who's the Assistant U.S. Attorney and head of the Child Sex Trafficking and Gang Unit. And you've been amazing and on both the sex trafficking front, but also the gang prosecutions. More people are going, more convicted felons are going to federal prison and doing federal time, which means they're not in jail locally and they're in for a lot longer sentences without parole. And that's because of your personal commitment. Appreciate that. Could you put the mic closer to your, there you go.
Mr. Mayor, thank you. Commissioners, thank you. I appreciate the offer and the opportunity to come and address all of you on this. And I have to say, from my perspective, from the Department of Justice, Portland has been a leader nationally on this issue, and for all of that, you should feel good about that. I had a chance to read the human trafficking report, and there's both a lot of things in there I think that a lot of people can be proud of, including all of you, because there are things to talk about in there that are great. It's also sort of, I guess, unfortunately, a sobering reminder of the problem that's out there and the problems that we still have to deal with. So I wanted to talk a little bit before, if you have any questions for me, briefly what I think the positives are before I talk about the others. And Mike's talked about it. It's the partnerships. In my experience as a federal prosecutor now for 10 years, this is the best relationship I have ever seen in the area of sex trafficking. I mean, the partnerships with the Portland Police Bureau, government agencies, as well as nonprofit groups, whether it's Janus Youth, LifeWorks Northwest, SARC, Department of Human Services, everyone has focused on trying to combat this problem. They've all worked well together. They all bring different experiences to it. And I think the results speak for themselves in the numbers. The Portland Police Bureau has been a leader in this issue, or in this topic, and how to deal with it. And they should feel good about that. They've partnered up with the FBI, they've partnered up with other local law enforcement to combat these, and they devoted resources to it. The other thing I want to mention is the report and the numbers. For my office, as you can see in the report, when the report was written, there were 12 cases that we indicted federally. Today, the 13th case gets indicted federally, and these are all 13 cases of sex trafficking, primarily focused on young women and children. And that's sort of the sobering part of this. The numbers speak for themselves, I believe. I mean, as you can see, there's been a dramatic increase both in local prosecutions as well as federal prosecutions on this. Unfortunately, when you look at the numbers and you think of 13 cases being indicted federally involving young women and children, I know we haven't solved the problem. And in reading through this, I mean, this time of the year, at the end of the year, is always a time for reflection. I think we're all sort of geared that way for it. We see how we did this past year. We think about our priorities and our plans for next year. And in reading this, we've certainly done that internally. Unfortunately, while we talk about our successes over the past year and we think about the holiday spirit, there is, unfortunately, an insidious and a very dark place that exists, even here in Portland. And there is, unfortunately, a 13 or a 14-year-old or a 15-year-old girl out there who is being forced by a pimp somewhere to advertise and sell her body for sex so that some sex trafficker or pimp can profit over her being repeatedly raped. And when you hear about these numbers, young women being forced to make $1,000 a day, and you put that in raw numbers in human terms, it's astronomical. So obviously we all have a lot of things to do, but I do want to pause and explicitly state on behalf of the U.S. Attorney's Office, to the commissioners, to the Portland Police Bureau, and Mayor Adams, I mean, particularly to you, both as mayor and your role as the police commissioner, I know this has been an issue that you focused a lot on, and you provided resources where the priorities are, and I have to say, the Portland Police Bureau has done amazing things in combating sex trafficking. From the sex trafficking unit that Mike is in charge of to the East Precinct Prostitution Coordinating Team, they are uniformly an amazing group of officers and detectives that are dedicated to combating and trying to eliminate sex trafficking. So on behalf of the U.S. Attorney's Office, thank you.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it. And now we're going to hear from the Executive Director of the Sexual Assault Resource Center, known as SARC, a key part of our efforts, because what Erin Ellis and her team provide are credible, positive interventions. And as much as we like to think that we could relate to someone of every walks of life, there are folks out there that are going to trust others more than us, and that's one of the many great things that you've done here, so thank you. Erin Ellis, Executive Director, SARC.
Thank you, Mr. Adams, Mayor Adams, and fellow council members. I can't thank you enough for having us here today. It's always a joy to come before you and talk more and more about the successes that we've been having. There are days when this is exhausting, and I can't think about our successes. I can only think about what our barriers are and what makes this work so hard. And then when we start having too much time thinking about how frustrating this is, there is this moment of clarity as to why we are so successful. It doesn't have to just be my organization. It doesn't have to be just the shelter with Janus or the U.S. Attorney's Office or law enforcement or LifeWorks.
When we're not able to connect with a youth, all I have to do is call Harry's mother and see if that youth can come spend some time over there and connect with someone on a different level. When I've got a kid who's really ready to completely blow out of all services, we can pretty much figure out what's going on, and it means calling Sergeant Geiger. I think I've got a kid who's ready to start talking about some stuff, and that's why we're seeing the behavior that we're seeing. We've got questions about what a prosecution, a trial is going to look like at the state level. We can call your office and get greater clarification. So we call it this no closed door process. It's the hub. So this child can come in, go out. I think the thing that I'm most proud about of SARC is that we are the only non-mandated reporter. Not everybody is aware of that. Everyone else by law is mandated. And I think that's the gift that we can give these children, is a moment of knowing I can be very safe with you. You are expecting nothing of me. There is no cost in which I share my story with you. And you watch the stress and anxiety come off of them. And you begin to build rapport and engage and share, and the story comes out. And when they have that trust with you is when they are able to put together a safety plan, and from there put together a plan to begin engaging with all of the players that are mandated reporters. But it's done in trust, and it's not done in pushing. This is the time of the holidays. This is the time when these girls and boys are wanting to go back to the life, because in their mind, this is their family. It's not the way in which we define a family, but it's what they know is family. So SARC and many, 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 many community members have put together what's called Operation Santa. Donations have been coming in from all over, and there's a big holiday party in our office on Friday. So the children get to come get their holiday gifts, decorate the tree, light the candles on the menorah, receive their gifts and a food box. And for those that can't participate, we'll be going to their homes and delivering those items for them. So SARC's time with the kids just is expansive. It's that crisis intervention. It's ongoing conversations on the phone. It's a full assessment of everything in their life that they may be needing access to, putting together a plan, identifying who is it that can help them implement that plan, and on we go. We're that constant, responsible adult, meaningful adult in their life. And then on another note, we don't just do that crisis intervention, but we've worked very hard to develop a prevention program. We have a 9-week prevention curriculum for what we call acute sexual assault, but that one-time sexual assault. We've now developed a 9-week curriculum for middle-aged school children, specifically around human trafficking. So it's in the schools. It's at Mount Tabor Middle School and Lane Middle School, which are feeder schools into Madison High School. And Madison High School, we know to be one of the schools that has the highest rate of incidents around human trafficking. And then in the fall, we'll have a violence prevention specialist there who will continue to implement 2 more years of prevention curriculum, help identify these youth, and get them back into a case management. So we've got a completely closed system around education and awareness for this population. So thank you so much, and happy holidays.
Thanks, and thanks again for all your work. Believe it or not, before Dennis and his team worked with us in the county and all of our partners, there were no secure treatment beds for juvenile victims of sexual exploitation. And so you built on your success in treatment beds and other areas to put in place with the council's investment exactly that, and really appreciate it. How's it going?
Well, I'm here today to tell you that I feel very proud of what we've accomplished and to thank you for the funding and support, because it's both. It's funding, but it's also the kind of moral support that I think all these folks have talked about that it takes to really deal with this issue in our community. I guess I could thank you because you're right, Sam. Before you came and visited our shelter, there was not a single, not even a residential bed, there was not a single safe shelter bed in the entire state. And after that, I can tell you since those beds have opened, we've had over 100 girls through the shelter. I can tell you those 100 girls represent, and some boys as well, that they represent over 140 or 50 episodes, because many of these kids come back multiple times. And we've now changed our standard for how we measure success. Instead of counting how many times somebody runs away, we count how many times they come back, because we're seeing the kids who are the most safely engaged in treatment, who will move to prosecution, who will work with SARC, are kids who have to build that by having the door constantly open. And by having the city and the county money together, we've now been able to give them one uniform door. If you want 10 minutes of safety off the street, you've got it. If you want 10 years of safety off the street, well, we can get you through age 17, and then we'll find something after that. But there's no limit to how many times or how long you can spend there on either side. So I think I want to say thank you on behalf of 100 kids who had no place to go before this shelter was open, on behalf of their parents who out there somewhere, in many cases, deeply cared and couldn't intervene. I would also, just to reflect the population, understand when we talk about the girls that we're seeing, and that's going to run for any of these folks that we're talking about up here, the numbers are remarkably uniform. Half of them are under age 15. Half of them are under age 15. 12 to 14 is the average age of recruitment in this town today. 11 is the youngest that we've had in our shelter, but we've had two 11-year-olds in there. But 12 to 14, and two-thirds of them are going to be, unfortunately, girls of color. So in terms of equity, it's a huge issue that we have to look at in terms of the community, all disproportionate representation. It's working because the kids are coming back. It's working now because we have combined the short-term shelter, which the city funds, with the long-term shelter, the county funds. And I can tell you we now have, for the first time over the summer, we've got four youth, one boy and three girls, who have been in the shelter for over 4 months. That had never happened at any one time. It doesn't sound like much, but it's a lot. And this week, we're having our first graduate successful transition into a foster home of somebody who has lived there. All four of the kids who have been with us are in school, which I didn't even realize until I took another official on a tour, but they're all engaged in an educational activity somewhere. I came back last week. I got invited to go to a national conference sponsored by Shared Hope International on the issue of shelter and residential services for sexually trafficked children in this country. Got flown back to Washington, D.C. I was on a panel with six other people, five of them running programs. And I told, I was sharing with Aaron, I came back and I felt like a gopher who had finally come out of his hole. Because we have been digging in our own little hole for so long that we didn't know what was happening anywhere else. And frankly, we thought our hole was pretty cruddy. But when we got up there and looked, we found out there's a lot of people around the country digging in holes, and nobody has a magic answer, that we're all trying to evolve this solution. So what did I find out? I found out that the shelter that we have here in Portland, there's fewer than 50 of them in the whole country, probably closer to 40. I can tell you none of them have the funding support that we have, and one of the major reasons that this conference was held in the Rayburn office building in the committee room of the Congress was so that the federal government would start providing resources, because all of the other programs are either living on borrowed funds from donors or day-to-day funds they get from the state, and they can't make it work. I can tell you of the five agencies that were represented on my panel, all operating programs like this, two of them, their programs were closed by the time they got to testify at the panel. So they'd been asked to come in several months ago to be a part of this. Most of them had already been shut down because of either funding or difficulty in working with the youth. So what we found out is there's very few of us out there. Nobody has it figured out. There are some areas that we really got some great information for people that are farther downstream than us. But what we also found out was nobody has the support that we have from joint governments to make this work. Nobody has the type of collaboration that we are talking about here. What I heard for an entire day was complaints about working with police, working with prosecutors, and working with state child welfare, because we have a number of states where the child welfare system will not even open a case on one of these kids because they don't meet the abuse criteria. And we have a dedicated team in the police department, a dedicated team in the prosecutor's office, and a dedicated team in the child welfare department. From your standpoint, that exists nowhere else in the country. Nobody else is doing co-educational shelter. They're all talking about boys need help, but they won't touch anything that doesn't have. We're doing co-educational shelter, and one of our long-term residents is a young man. So I think what I came back from was two feelings. One, and I think the sentiment you're hearing from these other folks, it's really sad to have to realize that this grew up on our watch. I mean, this program grew up under all of us sitting here today, whether we realize it or not. But to me, I felt really proud that once we saw it and recognized that this community has evolved a response through your leadership and through the cooperation of folks like this that is absolutely exists nowhere else. It doesn't mean we've got the answers, but it means that we're on the road to providing answers, and that we have kids getting here help that cannot and will not get help in other places. And that only happens because we're all willing to not talk to you, but to talk to each other. And we do it on a regular basis. And it's kind of amazing to think that that's a limited quantity, but it really is. Thanks, team.
Thank you all very much. Does anyone sign up to testify? Oh, I'm sorry, Sophia. You're here to...
Everybody's covered.
Could you introduce yourself, please?
My name is Sophia Xavier, and I am the Public Safety and Peacekeeping Policy Advisor in the Mayor's Office.
Is there anything you helped put together, the author of the report, working with everyone? Is there anything in the report that you would want to highlight that hasn't been mentioned?
I think that the biggest highlight here is the collaboration that goes on between everybody, all of the city partners, as well as county partners and the federal government. There's been the U.S. Attorney's Office. It's been amazing to talk with everybody here about the work that they do and to see the work that has gone into it and the thanks that they feel for what City Council has done. And just really, really hoping to see that continue into the future.
Thank you. Again, thank you all very much. Carla, is anyone, you may return to your seats. Is anyone signed up to testify?
One person, Dennis Morrow.
Oh, that's me.
Okay, great.
I'll yield my 3 minutes.
Move to accept the report.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Carla, can you please call the vote on the motion to accept the report?
Leonard?
Thank you, Sam, for taking this on and everybody for your great work. Aye.
Fritz.
We had an acute tragedy in our community yesterday with the shooting at Clackamas Town Center, and that is evidence of the acute problem that we have with guns in our community. In part, we have an ongoing problem with human trafficking, and that this report has evidenced. And so I very much appreciate everybody being here to talk about it and the mayor's leadership in not only talking about it but doing something about it. Again, half of the victims are under 15, and 12 to 14 is the average age of recruitment, and two-thirds of girls of color. So we are dealing with this problem. We will continue to fund the solutions, and I appreciate not only the public agencies working together, but also the nonprofits. The mayor has and Commissioner Saltzman, who wasn't able to be here today, have worked also with Commissioner Diane McKeel at Multnomah County and with our state legislators, and we need to continue to make changes in our state laws to make it absolutely clear that buying sex from underage children is illegal and not something that our community condones and that we're going to do something about it. So thank you so much for your report, and thank you, Mayor Adams, for your leadership on this. Aye.
Fish.
Thanks to everyone who joined us today.
To my friend Dennis, thanks for all the work you do, not just here, but helping deal with kids that are on the streets experiencing homelessness, drug addiction. Thanks for your stalwart work to support the community gardens and the village market in the New Columbia and all the various ways that Janice intersects with the city. And to our jurisdictional partners, it's wonderful to hear you say that both from the nonprofit side and the law enforcement side, we're doing things differently here. And that gives us hope we can continue to make progress. Thank you. Thank you, Mayor. Aye.
Adams.
This is one of the most important inadequately understood, embraced problem by the city, and not just city government, because this city council, as you've heard, is one of the few in the nation that have actually stepped up to the problem, but it's still, we're fighting this denial, and I really appreciate council listening to this report, because it shows we can, two things, we can make progress, and we have a lot more work to do. Thanks to my public safety team, Antoinette Edwards worked on this when she was my public safety coordinator, but also Clayney, Amrit Sandhu, and also Sophia. Thank you. Bye. All right. Can you please read the title for non-emergency ordinance, because it'll be fast. Item number 1452.
Replace code for towing and pay and park facilities with private property impound towing and add chapter 7.25, pay and park, and non-pay private parking facilities.
I would welcome back, Ms. Butler.
Kathleen Butler from the Revenue Bureau, and I'm here with Marion Gaylord, the towing coordinator. Thank you so much, Mayor and Commissioners, for your time today. We've been working on this item for a number of months, and we know you're very busy. We're going to do a very quick summary. This is a first reading of a proposed update to the regulations on private property impound tows. These are involuntary tows of vehicles from private property, and the regulations are designed to protect consumers by setting standards for when the vehicle can be towed, how and when the tower must release the vehicle to the owner, the amounts and types of charges, the documentation required before towing, record keeping and access to the vehicle, and sign and notice requirements. The city first started regulating these tows in 1988, and the last time these regulations were modified was 2003. The good news is that the complaints are down significantly since the documentation and regulation requirements have been improved. But Ms. Gaylord still processes and investigates approximately 200 complaints per year related to these tows. And in a significant number of them, she finds code violations, loopholes, and has to order refunds to the consumer. The changes that are before you are largely the result of identifying problems through this complaint process and also stakeholder input from the towers and other important stakeholders. The changes have been fully vetted with the agencies that are going to be more completely regulated, like public housing agencies who had previously been exempt from these code requirements. And I just wanted to mention that Portland has been considered a leader in this type of regulation in Oregon and in the region. Gresham has fashioned their regulations with consultation with Ms. Gaylord, and when the state started regulating this, they also used Portland's regulations as a model. In this update that we're proposing, we are going to extend the requirements to several types of properties previously considered exempt, such as public housing lots and also agency parking lots, and those stakeholders are in favor of this change. We are also going to require review by city staff of any non-single family or duplex residential properties that are going to be considered in the exempt category. We're bringing our regulations more closely in compliance with the state definitions for exempt properties. We are restricting towers explicitly from requiring payment of all fees before releasing pets or other emergency personal belongings. And we are also going to minimize the inconvenience to those who have been towed by requiring that all impound lots be located within the city of Portland. We also have some housekeeping changes where the pay and park lot requirements have been moved out to a separate chapter just to make it clear that that's a separate set of regulations.
And is there is anything you'd like to add?
I'm here to answer questions.
Great. Are there any questions from council? Do we have any amendments or substitutions? No.
I just wanted to thank the staff for briefing me a couple of months ago on this very thoroughly. That was most helpful to get it way ahead of time.
Thank you. There was a substitute version.
Did we move with the substitute?
The exhibit. Correct.
Just the exhibit. Yes, to the actual code language, yes.
I move.
And we do have one person who came who wanted to testify also.
Okay. Let's go ahead and take care of. I move the substitute.
Second.
Been moved and seconded. Carla, can you please call the vote on the motion to substitute?
Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. Substitute is approved. Sir, would you like to testify?
Thank you.
Thank you for your patience. Thank you for your explanation. You just need to give us your first and last name.
Good afternoon, Mr. Mayor and distinguished members of the City Council. My name is Victor Stephen Greenfield, commonly called V. Stephen Greenfield. And I thank you for the opportunity to testify on behalf and support of this proposed ordinance. There are two issues in the proposed ordinance which I would like to emphasize are really critical. I've been a resident of Portland since 1972. I've been a resident of the Peaceful Villa Apartments, which is managed by the Housing Authority of Portland since 2004. And they apparently were exempt from the protection for predatory towing by the city code, which I think gives a lot of towing companies a little more freedom or misguided understanding of what they can get away with, and especially any renegade towing companies. They're self-serving because they work on commission. My car was towed amongst five other cars of tenants 2 years ago, a little over 2 years ago, on a Saturday evening, and it was towed with, even though I had a permit, I've lived at that unbroken permit since 2004, and the tow operator towed my car 3 miles to their impound lot within the city limits, and our apartment complex is also within the city limits, Southeast 47th between Division and Powell. And when I complained about the exorbitant fee, despite the fact they had no authority to tow in the first place, they refused to return my car even if I agreed to pay. And as a result of the encounter, I suffered a severe respiratory attack. I have severe COPD. I'm on oxygen half the time. And I demanded getting my rescue inhaler, which was in the center console of my car. The tow driver refused and blocked me from getting it. Consequently, I had to call 911, and the police arrived and an ambulance arrived, even though I didn't ask for the ambulance. The police recognized right away that I had a right to retrieve my inhaler. I could have died because my vital signs were so great, severe, that the ambulance people wanted to take me to the hospital. In any case, they managed to get my inhaler despite the obstruction of the tow driver, and that helped. Additionally, the two items on the proposed amendment here to the city code, I think on page 10, emphasizes allowing access to emergency items. May I have another moment, please? To get emergency items such as eyeglasses, prescription, which this was, and any other items of that nature without demanding prepayment. And basically, they're holding your car hostage and your health is hostages as well. And I hope the city council recognizes this is long overdue for an adjustment in the city code for protection. And I thank you very much, and I welcome any questions.
Just to clarify your two issues with exempting the Housing Authority of Portland and then being able to get access to needed medical equipment. Is that correct?
Correct.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for your advocacy and
thank
for
you.
Taking the time to testify.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Anyone else wish to testify? If not,
Holiday.
You too. Thank you, sir. Moves to further consideration next week. That gets us to... can you please read the title and call the vote on 1443? This is not the lights portion of the discussion that we've had in the past. This is simply the green power portion. The light portion I'm going to move to consideration next week.
1443, achieve 100% renewable electricity for city operations by directing the Bureau of Internal Business Services and the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability to facilitate a purchase of renewable energy certificates each year on behalf of all city bureaus. Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
Thank you, Mayor, for your leadership on this and to staff and others who explained the concepts very well at the hearing. Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Adams?
I think I've already said all that needs to be said other than thanks. Aye. Can you please read the title for 1444, it's a non-emergency ordinance.
Authorize intergovernmental agreement with Portland Public School District for $5 million to review, prioritize, and implement transportation safety improvements concerning district schools.
This is the contribution that the city made as part of, City Council made as part of the adopted budget. So we just have to come back with a formal ordinance to do so. We have no presentation, but I'm happy to answer questions.
I have a lot of questions.
Well, luckily, it's not an emergency, so.
Let's set this.
Do you want to get them on the record?
I do.
Okay.
And I had emailed your staff, but I didn't get entirely the answers back, so I will need some more discussion.
Okay.
I have a presentation prepared.
Oh, you do? I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's quite right.
Coming up, good. I didn't see anyone.
Good morning, Mayor Adams.
My apologies, Gabe.
Councilors, my name is Gabriel Graff. I'm with the Active Transportation Division in the Bureau of Transportation. We have Jim Owens, also from Portland.
We Public have Schools. Lots of people here. Yeah. I just didn't recognize you.
That's quite all right. The Safe Routes to School program is in my portfolio, and it is in that capacity. I'm pleased to be here to present to you this intergovernmental agreement negotiated between the Transportation Bureau and Portland Public Schools. This IGA is the product of several years' worth of work and many long and hard conversations regarding transportation to, from, and around schools, specifically Portland Public Schools. As you know, most of Portland Public Schools' facilities are old, with an average age of 65 years. They were built at a time when most students were walking and biking to school. The school grounds and the streets surrounding them were not designed to accommodate the substantial number of students being driven to school by their parents today. And while in the Safe Routes program we have made significant gains in recent years in encouraging more students to get to school on foot or by bike, this remains a difficult issue for neighbors, for parents, and of course for Portland Public Schools and the Bureau of Transportation. On May 13, 2011, in response to community concerns surrounding these issues, Council directed the Bureau of Transportation to negotiate an IGA with Portland Public Schools that would allow both parties to focus limited capital resources to school-related transportation priorities across the school district. I believe this IGA, presented here today, accomplishes this goal, taking a step forward in promoting collaboration, problem-solving, and resource sharing between the Transportation Bureau and Portland Public Schools. On November 6, 2012, Portland voters approved a $482 million capital bond measure to rebuild and upgrade Portland Public School buildings. In this IGA, Portland Public Schools has agreed to set aside $5 million from this bond to fund transportation improvements across the school district. The funds will be targeted to the highest priority transportation needs across the district. The Transportation Bureau and Portland Public Schools will work together to identify these projects with a focus on equity and safety, using our public involvement work on addressing these issues at the ground level in the Safe Routes to School program. I'm available to answer questions, and as are Kurt Kruger from Transportation Development Review, Paul Cathcart from Portland Public Schools, and I believe Jim Owens from PPS has some remarks.
Why don't you come on up?
And I just have a technical question while they're coming up. One of my questions was regarding point 16G, and that the answer to that was that you struck that line in the final IGA, so I'm wondering if I don't have a copy of the final IGA because I was going off what was on the council agenda.
Yeah, I believe we made a few typographic changes, and that was one of the struck items.
So I will need to see what we're working
on. You have an underline and strike up?
Not with me, but we can provide that, yes. There is the final copy is, I believe, was in the packet that we provided to you.
Okay, who would like to speak? Sir, would you, welcome. Your thoughts on this.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Mayor Adams and members of the Portland City Council. My name is Jim Owens. I'm the Director of Capital Operations in the Office of School Modernization with Portland Public Schools. With me today is Paul Cathcart, seated on my right, who is a project manager with our Facilities and Asset Management Group. Thank you so much for the opportunity to testify today. We're here to express Portland Public Schools' support of the intergovernmental agreement that's before you today. The district appreciates your support of public school districts in the city and Portland Public Schools initiatives in particular, including most recently the district's capital construction bond measure. It's the voters' approval of this measure and your commitment to a strong working relationship with the district that makes the agreement you are considering today possible. The agreement implements a memorandum of understanding the district and the city had signed back in May of 2011. The MOU outlined the process by which transportation improvements at district schools required by city regulations would be evaluated, prioritized, and funded. The IGA also memorializes the intent of the MOU and furthers our mutual interest in providing safe, efficient, multimodal transportation options for our students, parents, and staff. We believe the agreement represents the best opportunity in considerable amount of time to begin to effectively address needed transportation deficiencies within the PPS portion of the City of Portland. It also provides clarity of responsibilities and will prioritize investment of limited district capital resources in transportation projects that improve the most significant transportation efficiencies within the district first. Thank you again for the opportunity to testify today. We're here to answer any questions that you may have of us.
And you're here to answer questions, Mr. Kruger. All right, Commissioner Fruit.
Thank you. First of all, it's a problem that I don't have the last IGA, nor was that, because I believe what I have in my packet is what was on the council agenda. So
that's a problem.
That is a problem. But more on the bigger picture, this agreement was intended to resolve the challenges we discussed under the park's conditional use permit revisions, that we were removing public input from changes in uses, particularly in sports facilities at schools, but also other activities at school, in exchange for this process. So it's of concern to me that there isn't any public input into the selection of the projects. And $5 million, while I am very grateful to the voters for having approved it and very grateful to the school district for having included that in the bond measure, is not a lot of money considering how many of the Safe Routes to Schools have significant infrastructure improvement needs. So I would like to work with you before next week to consider revisions to the IGA. We have a lot of diligent transportation volunteers in our neighborhood coalitions who are not necessarily going to be advocating for their particular school, but rather are really good at looking district-wide, how to prioritize and what the most urgent needs are. And so I think globally that there should be more or some public input into identifying the master list.
Amanda, could I, I'm sorry, I have 4 hours into this hearing, I'm beginning to become a little fuzzy, probably food and sleep deprivation. What was the comment you made, though, about changing the rules for public involvement on other school changes?
We did that probably a couple of years ago and had a vigorous debate about whether to allow parks and the school district to make changes without requiring a type 2 or 3 conditional use review. And that was partly because we were planning to make sure that the Safe Routes to Schools and more global planning by the City Council and the school district would prioritize those improvements in another process. This agreement refers to the conditional use process, but doesn't clarify how there is then public input into where these particular dollars are spent.
So I'd be happy to, between now and next week, learn more about your concerns. My recollection on the piece that you just described, though, was we took it up in the context of allowing for replacement of grass with turf fields and the modest expansion of an existing turf field, and we created a set of common sense rules around that after having a hearing and a discussion. So I'm not sure how that links with this, but I would be open to learning more.
Well, for instance, one of the key pieces is sidewalks and crosswalks and such on adjacent streets. And in this IGA, it references that the city that there might be waiving of some requirements related to the bond. So I appreciate the opportunity to discuss it with you and to work on it over the next week.
Okay. Sir, would you like to?
Just one thought.
Could you introduce yourself again?
I'm sorry. Paul Cathcart, project manager with Portland Public Schools. I think the district is open to a process by which to develop the criteria by which the master project list will be developed. But the list itself will be updated on a kind of a regular basis. So discussion about the public process into updating the list versus the criteria that will district and city staff will use. I want to make that distinction that I think that the criteria are going to be key here and probably the best opportunity for public input there.
Well, I appreciate that. And under the current proposal, there isn't public input until it gets to the Planning Commission for the process. I believe that in Portland Public Schools, there are good volunteers who can help with the updating as well. And so we shouldn't preclude that.
All right. Thank you all very much. Does anyone wish to testify on this matter?
That was all who signed up.
All right. Moves on to further council consideration next week. So, Carla, for the next 1, 2, 3, 4, if you could read, they're all second readings. If you could read the titles, they're related, and call the vote for each.
1245, authorize the addition of East Side Streetcar, close the loop improvements to the Portland-Milwaukee Light Rail Project as a city betterment and execute the design and construction funding agreement with TriMet. Fritz?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. 1446.
Amend contract with Stacy and Whitbeck, Inc., and authorize agreement with Portland Streetcar, Inc., for the construction of the Stevens Turnback element of the streetcar Close the Loop project. Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. 1447.
Authorize competitive solicitations for Portland Streetcar automatic train stop safety upgrade equipment purchase and installation contractors for the Portland streetcar vehicles. Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. So approved 1447.
Let's see. We just did 1447.
Sorry. 1448.
Yeah. Authorized revenue bonds for the Close the Loop project. Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. So approved. Can you please, the next two are related as well. Can you read and call the vote for 1449 and 1450?
1449, adopt the recommendations of the Northwest District Parking Management Plan, final draft dated June 2012, and create a transportation management association for the district.
Before you call the vote, I just have a technical question, probably for the auditor, for the city council clerk. The amendments that we discussed last week and accepted were not all included in today's agenda item, but they would be carried over as stated at the hearing last week. Is that correct?
The amendments that were approved last week?
Yes.
Yes.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
And 1450, create Northwest Parking Meter District and replace associated area parking permit program.
Call the vote on 1449.
Leonard?
So I've been here over 10 years. The first contentious hearing that existed here was on this issue 10 years ago. And from then till now, there's been no resolution nor lack of public process that has pointed our way towards a solution. I've been very torn about the proposal Mayor Adams has brought forward because beginning 10 years ago and without wavering, I have agreed that not only should these series of recommendations be adopted, but there should also be parking structures, at least one parking structure that we debated here probably as intensely as anything else I've ever been involved with, built in that area, as Mr. Zinger or the Zinger brothers had recommended. That's not part of this package that we're voting on, unfortunately. And unfortunately, I feel like instead of adopting a broader plan that maybe both sides had to give on a little bit, I'm adopting by my vote one half of what I think should be the solution to this larger issue of parking problems in Northwest Portland. But it is what it is. And I hope that we can move forward and even more comprehensively after this vote address parking issues, including very discreet, well-designed parking structures at some point in the future. With those observations, I vote aye.
Fritz.
Thanks to everybody who has given input on this and for the many, many years or decades of work that has been dedicated on parking issues by both staff and citizens. There are several citywide issues which I am committed to continuing to look into and to find solutions for, which are broader than the Northwest Parking District. Those include parking in apartments and multifamily dwellings with no parking requirement. There will be a hearing next week on the 19th with a report from the Planning Commission, Planning and Sustainability Commission on that, and I thank Mayor Adams for his partnership in that.
When is that coming next
week? Next week. It's not a time certain. But it's a report, so...
Thank God we have such a loose agenda next week. We can insert that in there as well.
Just a small little issue.
We're taking, you know, we're plugging away at things.
That was her idea.
Please listen without interrupting. Thank you. The issue of off-street parking and occasional commercial use of lots which are not currently allowed for commercial uses is something that we started discussing in the Rose Quarter. It's something that I believe is a sensible thing that we should look into citywide. I don't currently have a project in progress for that, but I have another 4 years to work at it. We have the curb cuts, and that refers to the curb cuts for driveways rather than the curb cuts for accessibility issues at corners. And that has been an issue in Corbett's and Wilkes-Barre Hill as well as in this district. So that's something that we could and should look at. We have a low-income waiver for permits or for a low-income assistance for getting permits. And we do have the issue that Commissioner Leonard raised, which is funding for transportation improvements in general. The thing I probably heard most consensus, although not entirely agreement, was the interest in looking at off-street parking structures. We simply don't have the money for that right now. So that's something that, along with a lot of other transportation improvements, we need to continue discussing. That said, this proposal, as amended, with all the amendments and exhibits that were attached last week, does provide an end to this phase of the process and a bridge to the next phase. And it allows this council to make a decision on the input that we've heard over 4 years after passing a ordinance back in 2009 and then another extension and now this one. It allows us to say this is what I've heard and this is what I believe is the best way to go forward, and it allows the new council to have input in that there will be at least two opportunities for further public process and council action moving forward. The amendments accept the plan rather than adopted it, which means this is the framework for discussion. It can be changed moving forward. It will establish a transportation management board. Mayor Adams is taking applications, and Mayor Hales will be appointing that board with council approval. And we can consider all kinds of suggestions moving forward. The TMA, the Transportation Management Association, will make recommendations, and those will go to first the transportation director, the transportation commissioner. Any two members of council can call for a public hearing on those recommendations. So things that were suggested, like $1 an hour parking, that such as we have in the Lloyd District, that's something that can be changed. The meter district, the first phase is permits south of Lovejoy and west of 18th. So that's the starting phase of permits. The second phase would be further permits in the rest of the district. Again, the map boundaries can be amended further moving forward as we find out what works, what doesn't. And this gives us a strategy for how to do it and honors and respects the work that has been done on this. There's one thing we can agree on this, and that's we don't all agree. So let's have a process, which this resolution and ordinance do, to figure out how to do it. I am the first to say that we need adequate public process on this. I think that we have had that and that we need to move forward. Thank you to Mayor Adams for your persistence and from my colleagues for your support. Aye.
Fish?
I respectfully vote no.
Adams.
Well, I want to thank the City Council, the majority of the City Council, for their support. As we learned from the Washington Park and Central East Side, and every time parking, on-street parking comes in front of us, these kinds of issues are not popular. But unfortunately, or fortunately, very necessary. I want to thank Katja Dillman. I want to thank Casey Ogden. Bill Hoffman, who's been on this issue in various ways for decades. He was a young man when he started on this issue. And everyone else in PBOT who has worked on this. I look forward to helping as a citizen move forward on implementation and also to move forward on seizing real opportunities that we can now focus on in the Northwest area so that all the energy that's gone on to fighting these Northwest parking wars can be focused on something more positive for that great part of Portland. Aye. Please read the title. Call the vote for 1450.
Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Fish?
No.
Adams?
Aye. So approved. Can you please read the title for item 1451?
Authorize Bureau of Development Services to move forward with the permit case management information system.